Okay, as long as we're on shock, why don't we just tell you the other kinds of shock so you won't have to forget. Well, so you won't have to wonder. You will forget, but we'll tell you again later. There are how many types of shock? 5. First one we already talked about, septic shock. We've actually already talked about another one too, anaphylactic shock. What causes anaphylactic shock? Allergic reaction that's mediated by what chemical? Histamine. Histamine causes vasodilation and vascular membrane permeability. So two things together cause the blood pressure to drop, just like septic shock. But in anaphylactic shock, you have the added complication of swelling causing bronchial constriction because your windpipe is swollen up. So it swells shut, and you can die from that too. What's the treatment for anaphylactic shock? Epinephrine. And what form does it usually come in? Injection. What kind of injection? Muscle, vein, fat. Subcutaneous fat. Which one? Well, that is an option, but not for anaphylactic shock. It's actually in subcutaneous fat. And usually comes in a pen. We call the EpiPen. So into the fat layer. All right. So we have septic shock and anaphylactic. Now, what is the problem in those two things? What are the two problems that happen? On the one hand, we have vasodilation. On the other hand, we have permeability. What does the permeability cause? Causes fluid to go out of the blood vessels. Now, imagine for a moment that a person was super dehydrated. What would they not have very much of? Water where? In their blood vessels. Or imagine for a moment that they were bleeding out. What would they not have very much of? Blood. So hypovolemic shock is low volume shock, caused by either severe dehydration or bleeding or fluid shift into the interstitial space. Now, the next kind of shock is caused by extreme vasodilation. We call it neurogenic shock. It's when you stop getting sympathetic stimulation to your arteries, so you stop stimulating alpha-1 receptors, and you get a vasodilation all over your body. It's called neurogenic. And there's one last kind, cardiogenic. And that's when your heart can no longer pump adequately. It's not necessarily that it's stopped completely. That would be called cardiac arrest. So it's still pumping, but it's not pumping enough to get blood to the tissues. And that's called cardiogenic. So what are our 5 types of shock? Septic, anaphylactic, hypovolemic, neurogenic, and cardiogenic. So it would be nice if you could remember those, but we're not going to test you on them just yet. That'll be in a little while. But it is helpful if you can remember them because it will be easier for you at that time. Question?
Can cardiogenic
be caused by your heart beating too fast? Either. So you can have cardiogenic for beating so fast. What does the heart need to do in order to pump blood? It needs to get blood into it first, right? If you're pumping so fast that you don't allow blood to get into it, you're not going to have very good cardiac output. On the other hand, if you're pumping so slow, you're just not pumping enough blood. So either one of those can cause cardiogenic shock. All right, back to immune system, just like Back to the Future. Cell-mediated, what cells? T cells. Now, CD8 cells always become cytotoxic. We already learned that. And their job is to kill traitor cells. cells that have become infected with virus. So they do not actually attack invaders. They attack sympathizers. They attack your own body. They are the secret police of your body. They are also in charge of attacking cells that have mutated and become cancer cells. CD4s get to choose. They can become helper 1 or helper 2. Ones regulate macrophages primarily. So they activate macrophages, they kill infected macrophages, and they regulate B cells a little bit. Now, infected macrophages. What's a macrophage supposed to do? It's supposed to eat and then destroy. Now, there are some bacteria that actually live inside of macrophages. The most famous of all time starts with a T. And you have to get checked for it every year you're in healthcare. Tuberculosis. One of the reasons tuberculosis is so darn hard to get rid of is because when the macrophages eat it, they become friends. So it's the T cell's job to either to tell that macrophage, look, either kill your new friend or I'm going to kill you. Oh, kind of like the mafia. Now, T helper 2 cells are primarily involved in regulating B cells, telling them to produce what? Better antibodies. All right, now humoral immunity, on the other hand, is antibodies. B cells become plasma cells and produce antibodies. Now, memory. I keep saying now, gotta stop it. Memory cells. Can take a month or more for a full maturation of a plasma cell. So how long does it take to get over most colds? About a week to 2 weeks, 7 to 10 days. So you're actually better before your antibodies are fully matured. So you don't want to go through that process every time, right? Because it's very wasteful. So what we'd prefer to do is have those plasma cells become memory cells. Now, memory cells offer a quick response to repeat infections. They also suppress naive cells because we don't want those naive immune cells mucking things up, doing that whole proliferation thing, wasting a month when we could just be out fighting the enemy. You know, that's wasted energy. We don't want that. And then they do not require co-stimulation. So they don't need a T cell to come around and say, hey, this is bad. They already know it's bad. So here is a picture. You get infected, you get IgM very early on, and then IgG starts to build up, and then the IgM goes down. Why do we have more IgG and less IgM? Because IgG is better. So we produce IgM early because we can. And then as we're able to produce IgG, we produce less IgM. Now, you get infected a second time. Now look what happens. You still get a little bit of IgM, but you get a huge IgG. Now, how many of you have had the hepatitis B vaccine? How many times do you get shot? Three times. This is the reason why. The first time, you get a little bit. The second time, you get a lot more antibodies. The third time, you get even more antibodies. So most vaccines, if you just get one dose, especially if it's a dead virus or a dead bacteria, your body's going to clear it so quickly, you're never going to get a chance to get fully developed memory cells. By giving you multiple injections separated by a month or more, you get much better antibodies. And you thought we just wanted to torture you. Immunizations. Now we have two kinds of immunizations, active and passive. Active is when the immunization stimulates your own immune system to produce antibodies. So you can think of active as activating your own immune system. Passive, on the other hand, is where you just get some antibodies injected. Now, do those antibodies last very long? No. Maybe 4 to 6 weeks tops. So it's just kind of like a supplement to your own immune system. So can you think of any passive immunizations?
Polio.
Say again?
Polio.
Polio is actually active. Nope, the flu shot's active also.
Breast milk.
In breast milk, you have IgA antibodies that are passive. What else? Nope, Hep A is active. There's really only a couple.
Tetanus?
Nope, tetanus is active. Remember, what we're doing is we're injecting antibodies. So we typically will call those types of immunizations immunoglobulin injections. So if a person has been exposed to rabies, rabid animals, or animals suspected of rabies, then they will get immunoglobulins in addition to an active vaccine. If a person is bitten by a rattlesnake, what will they get? Anyone here ever been bitten by a snake? They will get antivenin. You know what antivenin is? Antibodies against the snake venom. You know where those antibodies come from? Horses. What we do is we harvest venom. We inject them into horses. Why horses? Because they're bigger and you can inject more venom into them without killing them, which makes them produce more antibody. Then you take their blood, you spin it down in a centrifuge, and you remove the immunoglobulins. And then we inject that into a person. Now, immunoglobulins are very helpful for very limited purposes and times. What's the major downside to them? They hurt like heck. And the dosing is usually weight-based. So the bigger you are, the more you get. Immunoglobulins are always passive.
So is synergist
an example of a passive? Which one is synergist?
RNC.
I don't deal with babies. I'd have to look it up. I'm not sure. Yeah, because I just don't deal with babies in RSV. Yeah. That's respiratory syncytial virus, for those of you who are wondering. That's all I know. Yeah, I'm not a kid person. I mean, I'm a kid person, just not a kid nurse. All right. Patterns of inflammation. The major thing that is going to determine what your inflammation looks like is going to be the time pattern, whether it's acute or chronic. Now, acute is typically defined as up to 6 weeks. And chronic is anything longer than 6 weeks. Exudate is a fluid produced by inflammatory processes. So the most common one that you're going to see are serous, catarrhal, and purulent. So serous is a transudate. Who here has ever had an allergy and had just that runny nose that just drips? Or has known someone like that? Or you scrape your knee open and you just have this kind of weepy, clear fluid that oozes out. That's serous. Catarrhal is mucus. And this is what you get when you get a cold or a bronchitis and you get all that phlegm. That's catarrhal or mucus. Then we have purulent, which is pus. And we get that in things like furuncles, cellulitis, boils, acne. Acne, well, depends on what kind of acne you have. And then we have fibrinous, which is when you get fibrous tissue. These are sometimes called adhesions. Now, what happens sometimes, say a person goes for surgery, they open up their abdomen, and then they sew them back up. And a couple months later, the person is just in this excruciating pain all the time. And like, well, there's nothing wrong with you that we can find. But you open the person back up, and sometimes you'll find this scar tissue just all over the place. And that scar tissue is known as adhesions. And if it's sticking to your organs and pulling them in ways they shouldn't be pulled, that can cause a lot of pain. So that's called a fibrinous exudate. And then we have hemorrhagic exudates, which are typically will cause a blood mass. So remember, oma means mass. So hematoma is a mass of blood under the skin. All right, this is my time to draw on the screen. So we'll draw on the screen, and then we will most likely be done for today.